This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. This morning, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in North Carolina's partisan gerrymandering case. In 2016, Republicans drew congressional maps that helped them win 10 out of 13 seats. Plaintiffs in the case say they have smoking gun evidence that the GOP drew those congressional lines to gain partisan advantage. This case will be a big test of the court's position on political gerrymandering, which is a practice that dates back more than 100 years. WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry attended oral arguments this morning and joins us from Washington. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
Tell us about this case. Not the first time North Carolina has been flagged for gerrymandering in the courts, but this case is a little bit different. Tell us about this one.
It is certainly different than some of the other cases that have emerged before the U.S. Supreme Court here pertaining to North Carolina. This, of course, is a partisan gerrymandering case, which you alluded to just a moment ago. And in fact, it hasn't been permissible for 100 years, but it's been permissible for now more than 200 years in our nation. I mean, this is how the game of politics has been played. And 3 years ago, when the North Carolina House established new maps, because the first iteration of the maps were struck down for being an illegal racial gerrymander, one of the leaders in the House, David Lewis, got up and said he proposed doing this on a partisan basis because that was within the criteria that had been set forth by the court, and he was setting forth or proposing a set of maps that would give Republicans an advantage in 10 of those 13 districts because he didn't think it was possible to follow the criteria and give them an advantage to win 11 of those seats. Now, yes, the plaintiffs have said that's a smoking gun, and that is an example of the extreme nature of partisan gerrymandering in our country right now. But the other side, the defense, is saying, now wait a second. There's nothing in the Constitution. There's nothing that says this is not permissible. And in fact, this isn't a smoking gun. This is merely business as usual, though perhaps it is a little bit more extreme than it has been in recent decades.
A little bit more extreme, and that apparently is the reason it has made it to the courts at all, because as you say, this has been the law of the land. The idea of the gerrymander is a salamander-y-looking district that was drawn especially to make for political advantage with us for at least 200 years. And yet, the courts found in this case and in a couple of others, it has gone to an extreme, and in fact, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear. So something's different in this case, right?
Something certainly is different. There's also a case, I think just for context and balance here, that is being argued before the court as well today out of Maryland. And the challenge there is challenging democratically drawn congressional maps out of the state of Maryland. I think it's important also to note that with the evolution and improvement of computer software and technology, the degree to which they can carve out political districts, there's much greater nuance and a level of sophistication that did not exist previously. And on the other side, we have new metrics. We have metrics that can look at the wasted vote and can look at just how partisan and how unequal these maps are. And as an example, there is a computer simulation program that spit out 24,000 iterations of North Carolina congressional maps, 24,000. And of those 24,000, there were 162 that provided Republicans with a 10-3 advantage. Now, that's just 0.7% of all those maps that the computer spit out. However, so on one side, the plaintiffs will say that this is an example of extreme partisan gerrymandering. And on the other side, the defense says, well, you know, this falls into, while it is on one end of the spectrum, it falls into a legal set of maps. So one of the big questions that came up again and again today from justices on the Supreme Court was, well, what should the standard be? Are we talking about proportional representation? Are we talking about standard deviation? If this is extreme, well, where's the line? How far are we from extreme? What should the basis be to consider extreme gerrymandering? And that's ultimately the question here, and that's a very tough answer to get at.
And who are the plaintiffs in this case?
Well, it goes back 8 years because initially the plaintiffs sued on racial boundaries, it was Common Cause in North Carolina, and Common Cause, a national organization, of course, but the North Carolina chapter sued initially saying that the maps that were established in 2011 were illegal on a racial perspective. Well, the court agreed with those plaintiffs and struck down the congressional maps 5 years ago now. And then the legislature came back in and established new boundaries, during which David Lewis offered that now infamous quote. And then the League of Women Voters in North Carolina sued. The two cases were joined together, and they sued over the nature of this being overly partisan. And their challenge is that, you know, these maps stifle voters. They dilute Democratic voters' voices in North Carolina, and they effectively violate, this is their argument, the First and the 14th Amendments of the U.S. Constitution by doing two things. One, packing in Democratic voters to three districts that are very, very blue, but then also separating Democratic constituencies in Greensboro and Fayetteville to try to limit their impact in some of these right-leaning congressional areas.
And to give us an idea of how effective this is, take a look at, give us a sense of North Carolina's voting patterns versus its congressional representation. This gives us a real vivid picture of just how distorted this picture has become.
We are effectively a 50-50 state, and there might be a slight advantage to Republicans if we look at data across the last two decades, but I guess two contextual points here. One, when Democrats were in charge in the early 2000s and they drew congressional maps, just as recently as 12 years ago, you had a scenario under which Democrats held 8 of the 13 U.S. House seats in North Carolina. Well, after Republicans took control of the legislature and they were in charge of drawing maps here, they were able to manipulate the boundaries to their advantage. Again, that is legal and that's been done here. But if you look at 2018, of all the votes cast for all the congressional candidates in North Carolina, and we're going to include one district where there Walter Jones, now late Walter Jones, ran unopposed, so there was not a Democrat there. But if you even include that district, Republicans had 50.8% of all the votes cast for congressional candidates, so just more narrowly more than half. Well, they retained 77% of the congressional seats, so that's obviously a pretty wide margin.
All right, and so this gets back to some of the questions you heard from the bench today during oral arguments over the North Carolina gerrymandering case in the U.S. Supreme Court. What is a manageable standard? That's something that former Justice Kennedy wanted to hear, and perhaps as the swing vote on allowing these cases to come forward and in previous gerrymandering cases suggested that the court might be open to this because previously the Supreme Court didn't want to hear these cases. Otherwise, they figured this is all we'd hear. It does appear that the court has opened the door to setting that standard or finding a way to set the standard. Any idea, because I know there's been some speculation, the North Carolina case being such an outlier crafted by Republicans, and as you pointed out, they also heard the Maryland case today, a case where Democrats used the boundaries to favor their party. Any chance that the court might draw some very, very narrow conclusions about these two cases, say we've been fair and leave open all the other possibilities for the gerrymandering that's still rampant across the country?
Is there a chance? Absolutely. I think it's a narrow chance, and I think it's less of a chance than there was a year ago. You mentioned Justice Kennedy, and of course listeners will remember that case out of Wisconsin that similarly dealt with partisan gerrymandering. But the High Court here in Washington punted on that case a year ago, and the 9-justice bench is, you know, noticeably more conservative now with Justice Kavanaugh on that bench. But I want to note something that Kavanaugh said today. I think it helps to illustrate a response to your question. It was just interesting. Justice Kavanaugh had an exchange with Allison Riggs, who was arguing on behalf of the League of Women Voters on Tuesday morning. And he was referencing some of the amicus briefs that she had filed prior to oral arguments today. And what Kavanaugh said was, "What I garnered from briefs is that extreme partisan gerrymandering is a real problem, a threat to our democracy." And he said, "I won't dispute that," which I thought was a really interesting moment. He was acknowledging that, you know, extreme gerrymandering is an issue. But he went on to say, or ask, does the court have to get involved? Aren't there other actors? And he also noted there's a fair amount of activity in the states. And Riggs responded by saying the court is rightly concerned about the burden that this could have on the amount of litigation and the number of lawsuits that they see. But what Kavanaugh was getting at was, what about state constitutions? And this is something that Justice Neil Gorsuch also asked. And they said, you know, isn't this the role of the states to decide? Riggs responded to Neil Gorsuch by saying, other options don't relieve this court, meaning the U.S. Supreme Court, don't relieve this court of its constitutional rights. And I think one of the things that the justices were trying to note for the record, if nothing else today, was that state Supreme Courts can act. I think that's something we're going to see some movement on in North Carolina later this year. And Congress can also act. At one point, the justices noted that there are issues that come before them in which there are issues that the founders couldn't have fathomed, that the founding fathers of our country, they weren't thinking about those things. But gerrymandering and political manipulation was one. And they, some of the nine justices, pivoted back to this point that there are other avenues for which a remedy could be put in place.
And it's very interesting to hear that, because what that suggests is that it could be handled at the state level. The state Supreme Court could rule, and that obviously would be challenged. But if what the court is saying is, we don't want to hear these, then that would be the definitive decision. What that state Supreme Court said about gerrymandering, if the federal courts refused to hear it or said, we don't have jurisdiction here, that would end it. And that would be the final ruling. Fascinating stuff. Jeff, I got about 12 seconds left. When do we get a ruling on this?
Conventional wisdom is that we will get a ruling in early summer, in late June.
Jeff DeBerry, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you, Jeff.
Always a treat, Frank.
Jeff joined us from Washington, D.C. Just ahead, a new book recounts unexpected and often unheard stories about the U.S. Civil War and North Carolina's participation in it. We'll talk about it today on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Do stay tuned.